Kia ora, and welcome to the New Zealand Property Market Podcast, brought to you by CoreLogic, produced by Agents TV for the 11th of December 2023. I'm Head of Research Nick Goodall, and I'm joined by Chief Economist Calvin Davidson. Calvin, how are you, mate? How's your weekend?
Very good. Yes, very good. I had my daughter's fifth birthday party on Saturday, so that, as you can imagine, that was pretty hectic. We estimate maybe we had up to 40 people here at one stage, so I mean, I just didn't even register who some of the kids were. There was just a child. I don't know who you are. You're in my house. You're running around. But it was really good. Harriet, my daughter, really loved it. We had a bouncy castle and a big fancy cake. And so, yeah, I think it marked the occasion. Whether she'll remember it in future, don't know. but hopefully she'll remember some aspects. So, yeah, it was really good. But pretty tired by the end of the day, got to say. And so Sunday wasn't quite so active. But yeah, good to have it, but also good to have it in the past as well. So that was awesome. And yeah, caught up with some of the neighbours, came over, and people I hadn't met before. You know, some of the people who live around the place, and you kind of run into a kindy, but it's that sort of rushed conversation. It was good to have a chance to chat to them. So weather was good. So yeah, really, really good. And like I say, Sunday not quite so active, but that was very welcome too. So yeah, going good. How about you?
Yeah, mine was a little bit similar, really. We my youngest had a friend's fourth birthday party, which was at a a bouncy trampoline place out in Porirua. So yeah, same sort of thing, right? Yelling to the parents, you don't get much time to chat with at daycare drop-offs and whatnot. And we actually hosted a few people on Saturday ourselves as well. Weather wasn't quite as good, especially when we had perfect days Thursday, Friday here in Wellington. Saturday wasn't quite perfect, but just a bit of showing people around the house extension and things, and had a few drinks and a bit of food on Saturday afternoon as well. So yeah, the house sort of felt like it was all go, plenty of kids around and a few parents as well to have a yarn with and show the house. So yeah, sort of felt similarly hectic, really. And my mum was actually in town on Friday as well. So yeah, sort of felt like there was something on each day and sort of kept us going. And yeah, back into it for another week, I guess. But yeah, and another thing was actually running into or having a chat with either online or in person about a few people over the weekend to a podcast listener. So I thought I'd give them a quick shout out as well, Jazz and Thomas as well. Thomas, who actually was on a podcast I listened to called Between Two Beers. I'm sure many people have heard about that one, where these guys interview a number of different, you know, people in New Zealand particularly. But he's got a really interesting story from a business called The Water Boy. So yeah, happy to hear that he's also a podcast listener of ours and loves the sports chat. So we've got to keep that going, mate.
Yeah, well, I've heard some different feedback about that, but yeah, we'll keep it going.
So, the way yeah, I see it, if it's 50-50.
Cater to some people at this.
That's right. If it's 50-50, there's enough reason to keep it. So, and maybe we could go with the Black Caps, but just happy to see them square up that series. And maybe we will leave it there and we'll get into it for this week, mate. So the articles and stuff last week, your weekly article that you're always pumping out, last week you did one on just the overall mortgage debt situation, the old listicle, 10 things to know when it comes to the lending data, mostly from the Reserve Bank. So do you want to take us through that article, mate? Maybe a couple of the headline things for you, and I'll obviously link to the full article for anyone that wants to go and get into all the detail.
Yeah, the old listicle. Some people like them, I guess some people don't like them, but yeah, it's a good way to get cover a lot of points in a short period of time. A lot of things in there, 10 points obviously, and I guess for me, I try to provide a bit of a wrap up at the end, and I suppose those are really the key things for me. And the market, lending market's turning around. It's kind of slow, and it's coming off a low base, which is, you know, what we're seeing for lots of property market indicators. So nothing kind of new there. LVR rules are still biting pretty hard. You know, if you're an investor without 35% deposit or an owner-occupier without the 20, it's still pretty tricky. Putting aside new builds, of course, which you got those different deposit requirements, but it seems like LVRs are still an issue, and you never quite know if it's the LVRs themselves or actually it's just mortgage rates, and you don't want to take on a low deposit loan if you can avoid it, because it's going to cost you more, you know, bigger mortgage. So there's all these things are tied up. But I suppose the key point for me, that the really big thing that we're watching in the mortgage market is that repricing process that's still going on. You know, we've got 54% of mortgages right now are fixed, but due to see an interest rate change in the next 12 months, you know, for the most part, that's going to be an increase. People might be on 5.5 on average now. They've got to get to 6.5 or 7, depending on kind of which term they choose. So that process is still going, and yeah, it's been successful so far, but that's still definitely a key factor to watch, particularly if we started to see a few job losses, that it just gets that much harder. So I suppose that's the thing for me is, yep, the signs of a turnaround, there's different positives and negatives, but overarching it all for me is still this repricing thing. And yeah, there might be a, for the banks, there might be a bit of kind of new lending growth over the next 6 to 12 months, but there's still going to be that big focus on managing existing customers and getting them onto those higher interest rates, and then hopefully avoiding defaults and mortgage sales, that type of thing. So it's still that repricing thing's the big issue for me, but lots of other interesting points in there as well. So you go check it out.
I think it's such a timely article because this really is what defines the future of our property market. It's all well and good to see sentiment change and strong migration and all these things, but the truth is our housing market is dependent upon credit. And if you can't get it because regulation's tight or because at the moment high prices, so high debt levels and high interest rate, meaning you can't afford to borrow as much, that's going to continue to constrain the market. And so I think that is why it is so important to understand that no matter what else, if we don't earn enough to borrow enough to pay enough, then we're just going to see this market continue to be constrained to some degree. And I think that's the defining feature. And we're coming close to the end of the year. I'm not sure if you've had any thinking about what next year is going to be the year of, but it might be something to do with this, I think, because it is going to continue to be a feature of the market, whether it's looking at overall credit growth, whether it is those breakdowns, like you say, of LVRs, potential introduction of DTIs, the mix between the different buyer types. Like, to me, this is going to be the key thing that defines next year's market anyway. And interest rates, of course, is going to be a key one as well. Do we see a drop in interest rates next year, which would, I think, add, probably a decent chunk of demand back as more people can afford to borrow more money. So yeah, look, really timely article, well worth looking into. And I know that we're obviously tracking this every month or as the data comes out. So it's not like it's the first we've done, but obviously good to put it all in one space. Lay that down, that marker down, and we'll continue to track each of those different series as we move into next year. So yeah, just a good one from that perspective. I mean, anything else to add there? Otherwise, I thought, there was some lending data actually released last week from the Reserve Bank around that period that people are choosing to fix for, which I quite like understanding in terms of, what are people picking at the moment? Does it tend to be following the general wisdom of the crowd? Maybe based on economic commentary and brokers' commentary. So yeah, I don't know if you've got anything else to add on that one, or just look into that Reserve Bank data.
Yeah, I'd probably just add the whole, or reiterate that point you made about the difference between sort of sentiment and the actual reality. And it's all very well, I guess, for it's probably an investor thing, really. But it probably applies to maybe movers as well, first-time buyers. But certainly for investors, there's a seems to be a confidence thing coming back. Like, great, change of government. I've been waiting for this. I'll now have a cheaper tax bill and shorter Brightline and all of this. I'll get back in. And some of those tenancy rules changing as well with kicking tenants out and stuff. So, that's sort of changing, and there seems to be a sentiment thing, but it. Does that translate into reality when you do your spreadsheet and you look at what the rent is and what your mortgage rate is, critically, if you can get a mortgage in the first place, if you got the deposit, this sort of thing? Yeah, that's where there could be a difference between the sentiment and reality. And so probably just that point. And I think some of that's coming through in that article. DTI is another factor to keep in mind for people if they come in next year. It's all very well to think, yep, I'll buy a property and maybe I can kind of get the interest rates to work, but can I get the money? So there's definitely that. But yeah, in terms of those Reserve Bank numbers, so this is where they look at people taking out loans lately, whether that's to actually buy a house or switch banks or top up your existing mortgage, the terms that people are choosing. And in October, there was 72% of those loans were fixed for up to 2 years. So there definitely still is that strong preference for, I suppose, shorter term fixes. And I think I haven't got it noted down here, but if you go back a year or two, that figure was below 60%. So, just the shift in the way interest rates have gone, just at this sort of peak for the cycle, maybe this idea that you don't want to be locking in for too long. So that share of people fixing short has increased as we've got closer to that peak for interest rates. You don't necessarily want to fix for too long. So just at the moment, it seems to be that people are finding that sweet spot in the kind of 1 year, 2 year, 18 months fixed range where gives you some certainty for a year or two. Certainly protects a little bit if we do see a bit more of a mortgage rate increase, you're protected against that. But also, you're not going to be locking in too long where there's a risk of overpaying if and when mortgage rates fall. So, and pricing will play a part there, relativities between 1 year fix and 3 year fix and that sort of stuff. But yeah, that's where everyone will make their own decision, of course, and they'll have their own rationale. But that's what we're seeing lately. Certainly that strong preference for shorter fixes, and that preference has just got stronger over the last year or two as well. I think as we get towards that peak for rates, you want to try and avoid locking in for too long. So yeah, that's what we're seeing in the data, and useful new cut of the figures that the Reserve Bank provides.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, again, like it just reinforces, what we talked about in the guest podcast last week with Rodney, where he talked about, that seemed to be the way that people were looking and thinking. And obviously that was formed by, their read on things, their advice from, reading different commentary and obviously how the market prices, where interest rates are going and going to go. So I think it all kind of matches up, pretty typically, and is interesting from that perspective too. Just had one more thing back on the lending side of things too, and it just was reminded me after a few conversations on the weekend, right? Like you talked about, yeah, investors definitely have improved their sentiment, but are still affected by how much they are willing or able to borrow. I think that's still true of the of owner-occupiers too. And really interesting over the weekend, just a couple of conversations from people from our kids' daycare, and they've ended up buying a home out of town, right? Like not in Wellington City. They've had to move to, Kapiti Coast or Upper Hutt to get into the property market. And that's really been an affordability thing, right? So either yes, you could probably afford to buy in Wellington, but it's going to be, a not very nice property or a much smaller property than what you can buy when you're buying further out from town again. So I just think those affordability decisions are really coming in to people's thinking, and that is based on how much they can borrow. And then as soon as you start to look at those markets and what can I get for whatever it is, 800 grand, $1 million, whatever, in Wellington compared to what you can get for that same price out of town, and you don't need to be, working from home. Obviously, they'll start to weigh those things up and make a decision off the back of that. And just something probably to keep in mind when we're talking about, the future of the market and, how those owner-occupiers think, whether it's a first-time buyer or someone that's moving to, second or third home or whatever. We talk about the impact of migration to the large centres, but it just makes me wonder about this Wellington City market where, if people can't get the value they want, and you can get so much more by being further from town and you don't have to commute, or you don't mind the commute and you're not doing it as regularly. Like it just might mean that we do see those, I don't know what you call them, they're satellite cities, close to the main centres. Maybe they'll continue to do well, whether it's a Rolleston and Christchurch, Upper Hutt and Kapiti and Porirua and Wellington, some of those, further afield places in the Auckland region. Same thing, maybe even Hamilton, Dunedin, I don't know. But it just makes me wonder a little bit more that, if we are feeling that pinch from an affordability perspective, what are you going to sacrifice and where are you going to pick to stay? Maybe that location isn't quite as important, especially if you don't need to be in town for work. So yeah, just something else to consider as we move through this next phase of the market, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And along, you never know quite what the drivers are, whether it's housing affordability, it might be other things too. But over the weekend, I saw a, didn't read the whole article, but there was a headline from Cameron Bagri wrote an article along those lines that there is this different, there's lots of population trends going on at the moment. We've got obviously international migration's massive, but then there's this sort of below the surface internal migration. And yep. A lot of those international migrants going into Auckland, let's say, but also people who have lived in Auckland for a while already shifting out, maybe going into that sort of so-called golden triangle, perhaps living somewhere in between Hamilton and Auckland, shifting to, towards Bay of Plenty, whatever it is. And certainly around Christchurch. I mean, it's really great at Christchurch now. It's Rangiora, Rolleston, Lincoln, where I live. There's definitely that push out. You can imagine Wellington up in the Hutt Valley, Kapiti Coast. So, yeah, his article, I'm not sure what the full thrust of the article, because as I say, it was just a headline. But yeah, certainly people are talking about that. Might be housing affordability, might be other things too, the whole remote working and having to be in the office every day. But yeah, it's certainly something to think about for future trends.
Yeah, I'll check out the article. I hadn't heard about that one, so I'll go have a look. And it also reminds me, I'm sure we heard from the Housing Urban Development team that they were doing some work on internal migration, maybe with the Stats New Zealand guys. And I would have thought we'd have an update on that by the end of the year. So I might have to chase them up and see where that one's at. Because I think, yeah, if there's even better and more data on understanding that internal migration, I think otherwise we only get that, what, yearly update. And we had a recent one that did see Auckland's population grow after falling the year before. But yeah, certainly worthwhile understanding that if there's even more data out there to understand how that might influence those markets as well, to counterbalance or otherwise that internal international migration, sorry. And look, in line with this, and it was a relatively quiet week for data, but we did update our own bioclassification data, and I thought it was interesting because again, following from Rodney's chat, he talked about maybe those movers being one to watch for next year. They were up over the month, that's up to 25.2% of purchases in November. But still, those first-time buyers remain relatively strong at 26%. Have you had a decent look over that first-time buyer data? I thought I could run through some regional stuff. I've got it here in front of me. But yeah, back to you if you've got any thoughts first, then I can maybe touch on some other key statistics across those main centres.
I'll leave you to do the regional stuff. I hadn't got that far, but it was just those headline figures for me. First time buyers still strong. Rodney the guru picking movers, perhaps just returning slightly. I suppose the other thing was the mortgaged MPR is sort of 20. If you look at it month by month, and it can be a bit volatile, but they were down at 20% of purchases in September. It's just popped up a little bit to 22 in October and November. So, one to watch. It's not a flood or anything like that, and we just talked about how there's a big difference between kind of wanting to buy a property and actually doing it. What the sums look like, can you get the money, all of these things. So, no sort of clear trend yet. It's early days, but certainly investors are going to be a group to watch over the next little while. And our bioclassification stats will certainly be able to monitor that. So that difference between sentiment maybe right now has brought a few people back, and maybe they've been planning it for a while, waiting for the government to change, and perhaps looking to do that now. But yeah, it does that translate into reality later? And that, yeah, not so sure, because those interest rates are still a challenge. So yeah, that's the only thing I'd add.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And look, Auckland shows a very similar trend. Those MPOs, as low as 23% first quarter this year, and just slowly trended up to 26% for the 2 months of Q4 that we've got so far. So I think that trend's real. And first-time buyers still relatively high, still the larger proportion at 28%, but it has really flattened out over about the last five or so quarters. Hamilton, just what I got it in front of me as well, a little bit more volatile quarter to quarter, but first-time buyers 29% of the market there, MPOs 27%. So we are seeing strong competition between those two groups in that part. I mean, I think Tauranga is a bit different in terms of a makeup of the buyer types there. Very strong mover presence in that Tauranga market. We know many of them coming from outside of the area, but 32% of sales going to movers in Q4. First-time buyers a lot lower, down at 22%, and those MPOs hovering around those low 20% mark as well. Wellington, another strong first-home buyer market, 33% of sales going to first-home buyers across the broader Wellington region. So that's all four main cities, or the actual cities in Wellington. Movers actually quite low at 19%. So maybe some potential for growth in the Wellington region as well. Christchurch is also a first-home buyer. Good strength there, 29% first-home buyers there. And MPOs sort of flattened out around that 24% mark. And then just to round it out, Dunedin's been one that's again quite volatile quarter to quarter. We have seen strong presence of first home buyers there, 32% so far in Q4. So maybe finding some value in that Dunedin market for those first home buyers at the expense of movers, really. And MPOs certainly haven't been as active either. So maybe that yield in Dunedin's just struggled a little bit. So we haven't seen as much growth in the MPO activity down there as well. So yeah, look, just running those very, very quickly. Generally, you can find that data. I know you'll be putting together our monthly chart pack this week for release next week. So we'll talk more about that pack itself, but it does have some bioclassification data in it. Otherwise, we sort of had some ad hoc releases looking at the bioclassification data. So certainly plenty out there to go and get that, or just look at last month's chart pack, really. But yeah, go and have a look at that one, and certainly let us know if you've got any questions on some of the detail around that. But that pretty much rounds up the data from last week, Calvin. There's a few things to look out for this week. Maybe the headline one being that GDP figure for Q3. So, yep, it's a couple of months old now, of course, but is an important one for measuring our economy. I think based on the NZAC data, you were still expecting a slight increase in that quarterly release. But what's your sort of preview of that data? And then, what else are you looking for in terms of data this week?
Third quarter GDP out on Thursday at 10:45, so it's always a bit of a milestone day. As I say, Q3, so it's now 2.5 months out of date, but it's going to be an interesting one. We don't sort of run through line by line and try and build the picture up of what GDP might do. It's a bit of a headline thing. What's the NZAC telling us? Kind of looks like, maybe a 0.3% expansion in the third quarter. So, recession, just if it ever arrives, just gets pushed out by 3 months. But the range is quite wide. I think I saw Westpac as picking a slight fall in GDP in the third quarter. Maybe somebody like ANZ going from 0.4, 0.5. So there's a bit of a range, and you might say, well, if Westpac's right and it goes down 0.1%, I mean, does it really matter? It's probably within the error margin. The key point, whether it's minus 0.1 or 0.3, it's still pretty subdued. And so, we might have avoided technical recession so far, but it's hardly kind of rockstar economy stuff either. So we're sort of just ticking along in the economy. So as I say, maybe it's that modest growth, but the bigger picture is that it is modest, and we're certainly not off to the races. The latest Reserve Bank numbers on GDP for the fourth quarter and the first quarter of next year, they're pretty much predicting no growth again. So it could be, we could be looking at sort of 6, 9 months of pretty much no change in the economy. So it's kind of treading water, but the risk becomes, well, if a firm's profitability is being affected a bit, they're not getting that margin, and what happens to jobs? And then that starts to become more of a concern for the housing market, for that repricing thing. So I think it's obviously a headline indicator to watch. It's not so much, I guess, directly related to the housing market, but certainly, if the economy is kind of just struggling along, what does it mean for jobs? What would that mean for housing? So it's that kind of two-step process to get through to housing. But it's certainly an interesting one. Probably some kind of growth, but it's going to be pretty lackluster. So and I suppose then the key thing is, well, a couple of months out of date, what's going on right now? Well, it feels like things are just sort of bumbling by a little bit right now, and like I say, Reserve Bank thinks that might continue into next year too. So it's not great news on the economy, but at least not a recession either.
No, and I think that, from the economic health perspective, some of the commentary also goes down that per capita GDP, doesn't it? So, like, even if we're holding flat, that'll actually be being contributed to by growth in population, which means per capita, we're actually seeing less productive economy. And that's obviously a concern from a broader economic perspective. As long as that money's still flowing through and we're holding up, then businesses still be doing okay, even if it's based on more population growth than, the people that are already here spending more money. So I think there's all those little factors and it's the sort of, I don't know, weightings or whatever that you're kind of getting a read on. Your main point, though, I think, being what does it mean for the housing market, of course. And I think that's where, like you say, it comes down to how the business is doing. Are they going to keep employing people? How confident people feel in their jobs? And then how does that, flow through to them holding on to their property, keeping up with their mortgage payments? And that's the lens we put over it. But from a broader economic health perspective, it's probably more concerning than not. But from a property perspective, it's like it doesn't really matter where the growth comes from. As long as, businesses are still seeing turnover, then they'll hopefully continue to invest. And that's where sentiment comes into it too. So there's a few different takes on it and things to watch out for in any coverage and release of that. But we definitely have that, what does it mean for the housing market? And then that's where it comes back to almost, business and then jobs and then, mortgage payments. So yeah, that's kind of how we wrap it all together. Otherwise, this week, mate, the old 1-2 punch of the migration data in time with the rental price data. Just expecting more of the same from those two.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, we get net migration figures for October on Tuesday. They've been running at record highs, and it won't stay that way forever, of course. What goes up must come down. But even a bit of a slowdown, even if we see that start right now, fact is we've still got an extra 120,000 people in the country compared to a year ago, and a slowdown from there will still mean more people coming to the country, just not as many as there were. So it's still big pressure on services and certainly the housing demand. So then the next related release, as you alluded to, is we get the rent price figures on Wednesday. That's for November from Stats New Zealand. We've seen them running at pretty much record highs in the last few months. So, wages are going up. That tight supply demand balance, good for landlords, not good for tenants, obviously. But yeah, more insight into that sort of overall housing demand picture this week, migration, and then those rental figures. And we've got maybe, I think sometime this week, we'll get the Real Estate Institute numbers on sales and their house price index. That'll be for November. I'm kind of expecting that Thursday, Friday. So yeah, just give us a little bit of insight into what's happening via estate agents. You kind of anticipate sales rising a bit, price index up a bit, but still just kind of a little bit. That degree of caution there, patchiness around different parts of the country, still the challenges from mortgage rates, this type of thing. So yeah, I wouldn't necessarily be expecting that sort of straight line recovery in the Ryan's figures, but still, we have turned the corner, so you'd expect some kind of positivity in those numbers. So yeah, kind of it's a reasonably high profile week for the housing data, really.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. Hopefully, we get it Thursday, not Friday, seeing as you'll be up in Wellington and we'll be heading up for the Wellington Christmas party for CoreLogic. So, we won't have too much time behind the desk to interpret those ones. We'll have to wait for the weekend or Monday so we can have a chat about it on the next podcast. But certainly looking forward to that one anyway. Otherwise, mate, it's probably just the releases that will come out this week from ourselves. You've written the old best of the best report, so suburb level analysis of how the country's gone throughout the whole year, I guess, and a few of those old listicles and top sales and whatnot. We can provide a bit of a preview on that one. And I've got the monthly video also coming out. It'll be recorded on Wednesday, so it should be live by the end of the week. But yeah, anything else from the best of the best people should look out for, and we can maybe chat about that next week.
Probably just to talk about the title. I mean, it's also the worst of the worst. There's some underperformers in there as well as the top performers, but also just that phrasing, that depends on your perspective. I mean, something going up 20% might be the best of the best for some people, but for others, it's terrible. So, there's always two sides in the housing market. But yeah, that report's got all the suburb level detail, your top sales, where the highest and lowest yields are, time on the market, highest values, lowest values, rent change, this type of stuff. So it's pretty detailed. There's a lot of tables in there. But hopefully there's a good kind of executive summary, which I guess sets the scene and talks about some of the key happenings in 2023, but also what the themes are expecting for next year, and then bring in some of those suburb figures as well. So yep, that'll hopefully create a bit of a buzz this week.
Yeah, we'll wait and see, I guess. And maybe next week we can touch on, some of those areas that have done the best. If we're going to calculate that based on growth or, like, say, yield and those other measures that maybe aren't talked about as frequently, we can maybe chat about some of those and our thinking as the reasons why next week as well. So that's all good. All right, mate. Well, that's pretty much going to finish us up for today. Anything else on your mind?
No, that's it. That's it. Yeah, busy week professionally and personally. So we'll get to this time next week and can sort of start to breathe a bit more easily. But yeah, 1 week to go.
Good point. Yep, this is penultimate one for the year. I think it's number we I've, I only put a number on when it's the normal pod between you and I. This is number 49, so we basically do 50 a year, miss out to over 2 weeks, of course, but otherwise we've hit every single Monday or first day of this little week following public holidays. And yeah, next week will be 50, so we can raise the bet and go on holiday. It'll be nice. But no, all good, mate. Well, thanks as per usual for all your thoughts and some good chatting there, for some a bit of different data, and obviously less of a quiet more of a quiet week from the data perspective anyway. But thank you very much for listening. Please do make sure you subscribe to the show and get in touch, and give me that feedback when you see me in person if you are a listener as well. Always nice to hear, especially where it's unexpected and you might not be from the or in the industry as I know it and are still listening. So I'd love to hear that feedback. But Lee's gonna say thanks once again. My name is Nick, he's Calvin. You've been listening to New Zealand Property Market Podcast. Mā te wā.